What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer, and you have just stepped into my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, it's all about the launch of God of War Ragnarok and the time that I've spent so far playing it, as well as what I'm hoping for next from the series. So let's dive right into the episode and turn the page in my Captain's Log play sessions discussion. Gamers, the God of War franchise and myself, we have been pretty good friends since the year of 2005, when the very first God of War game launched on the PlayStation 2 in March of that year. And for those of you that may not have known this, it actually launched on the same exact day as the PSP, the PlayStation Portable. So I had a very tough decision that night. What was I going to play? Was I going to play the brand new console, the PlayStation Portable, or was I going to play this game that I had very much been anticipating? Because ever since the God of War cover story on Game Informer, leading up to its release, the different previews, just everything about the game that I had read and seen, I was just like, man, I have got to play this game. It looks so fresh and different and unique and mature. And man, I was not disappointed. Believe it or not, yeah, sure, the console won out on launch night at midnight. But in the end, I would say God of War, the game, won out on the system of the PlayStation Portable. And the reason I say that, gamers, the game wasn't that long, right? Especially by today's standards. That original God of War, you probably beat it in very much less than 10 hours. But there was just something so impactful about it. The story, the character of Kratos, why he looks the way that he does, the ashes of his dead family that make him have that white skin. There was just so much amazingness that came from that game's story, the suffering and the identifying that I could do with the character of Kratos, not because I wore the ashes of my dead family on me or anything like that now, don't get too crazy on me, but just the fact that I could understand his frustration and understand the hatred and the anger he had toward the Greek gods. So gamers, God of War was one of my favorite games of that generation, the PS2 and Xbox and GameCube generation. So when the second game was announced, I gotta be honest, I was absolutely destroyed because it was coming out on PS2. And now, you know, that may not be a bad thing if I had still had a PS2, but the problem is God of War 2 was launching on the PlayStation 2 in 2007. Now, if you didn't know, the PlayStation 3 launched in the end of 2006, November of that year. And the Xbox 360 actually launched in November of 2005. So here we are, and it's well into the next generation of consoles. And I've had a 360 for well over a year. I have now had a PlayStation 3 for a few months. Luckily, it was the backwards compatible PlayStation 3 that launched, the $600 one. Insane, looking back on it now. But regardless, I had the option to be able to still play this game, even though I didn't have a PS2 console anymore with that backwards compatibility PS3. So I still planned on playing it, getting it. I did. The problem is, I was so wrapped up at that time in my gaming life with achievements and just the 360 and the Xbox brand that I never played past the opening scenes or opening sequences, if you will, of that second game in the series. And there was nothing wrong that the game did. It was all me. And my good friend over at Graveyard Gamer, Logan Phoenix, a gaming podcast right here on Anchor. Check out the Graveyard Gamer podcast. If you like mine, I promise you, you'll like his. Him and I have talked about this for years and years since that moment, because he's also a huge, massive God of War fan. And man, it's one of my biggest gaming regrets that I didn't actually stick with God of War 2. And you know, just kind of going through my history here with you, if you don't mind, of myself and the God of War series, God of War 3 comes out, and I'm like, you know what? I let 2 pass me by. I'm not doing that with God of War 3. Again, it looks amazing. Gamers, the day that God of War 3 released, I was laid off from my job at Blockbuster due to store closures. So, at that point, was it really financially sound to lose my job and also start buying and continue to buy games at that point in time? So again, God of War 3 slipped through my fingers. And for the years that passed since that's release, I have purchased God of War 3. It is now also part of the PS Plus games catalog and all these different options and potential avenues for me to play this game. But I still haven't. I did play and dabble in the PSP games and enjoyed what little I played of those. I never played Ascension when it came out as well on the PS3, but I will say that when it came time for God of War 2018, and I saw what was supposed to be coming in that release, initially, you know, I'm taken aback, right? I'm kind of completely caught off guard and kind of defensive because I'm like, wait a minute, Kratos is from Greek mythology. How are they now going into a Norse mythological setting? How does that make sense? Like, how are they going to explain this? Well, gamers, what transpired as of April of 2018 when God of War released on the PS4 that year is history, because I got to tell you, they did it better than I could have ever imagined. And it makes sense. If you haven't played God of War 2018, I won't go into the details of how it makes sense, at least to me. But I absolutely fell in love with this version of Kratos, his son Atreus. You know, because going into God of War 2018, we see we have this character of Atreus that we know is Kratos' son. And, oh, he's going to be with you for 99% of the game. And look, as gamers, we all know that typically when you have an AI secondary character that is shadowing you throughout the course of a game or sequences of a game, more often than not, it sucks. We'll just be honest here. It sucks. They usually have horrible AI. They get in the way more than they help you out. And that's what a lot of gamers, myself included, were concerned about when it came to Atreus. And how are you going to have him involved in that visceral, just fast-paced combat that God of War is known for? How is that going to work? Gamers, it worked absolutely beautifully. Couldn't have worked any better than what it did. And it was a perfect complement, having Atreus' bow and arrows and his different melee options and what have you complement Kratos' melee carnage between the Leviathan axe and those blades of chaos. So it was a match made in heaven, as the phrasing says, right? And I could not have been more excited about it. The Norse mythology aspect, immediately, once I saw what they were doing, and by the end of that 2018 game, realizing that, wait a minute, they could potentially have options for all of ancient mythology at their fingertips here within the context of a God of War setting, story, character of Kratos, etc., etc. I will get into some details about that a little bit more later at the end of the show, my Captain's Decree, so stay tuned for that and what I would really like to see coming in the future from the series as far as the mythology and the setting is concerned. But when it came to that 2018 game, I mean, it was one of the greatest games I'd ever played, one of my favorite games I've ever played, and I could not wait for its sequel. Because as most of you listening to this probably experienced or know, that scene at the end of that game where all you see is essentially Thor and Mjolnir standing there, Thor's hand next to Mjolnir with the lightning flashing, coming to Kratos and Atreus' house and like, yo, you killed my kids. Come on now, what's it? Like, he didn't say anything. But if obviously playing through the game, you know at that point that's what happened. Oh man, it's just like, ooh, can't wait to see where this goes. And when it was announced and confirmed, there's no DLC or anything like that. You have to wait for the next full-on game. Well, here we are 4 years later and we have Ragnarok. And what's very interesting to me, I love the fact that Santa Monica Studio made the decision, instead of going with what their initial plan was, which was to make this God of War rebooted series a trilogy set in Norse mythology, they decided, you know what? It's going to take us every bit of at least 12 years by the time that third game is released from when the first game was started and released. And it's just going to be way too long to ask gamers to continue to come back to this story. Let's tighten this up and release it as a duology and do this in two games. So Ragnarok is the culmination. It's the continuation of 2018's God of War, but also the culmination of this story and this setting. This is it for Norse mythology. But that also has me very excited, again, for what the future could potentially be. So that's kind of a little history of myself with the God of War games, as well as, you know, what 2018 meant to me leading into the release of Ragnarok. But now let's kind of get into what my experience has been so far with Ragnarok. And gamers, I gotta tell you, I have dropped 16 hours into Ragnarok since its release on Wednesday. I'm recording this just 2 days later. Now, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday morning, I have had to play. I actually requested off a few extra days this week so that I could fully enjoy God of War Ragnarok without the interruption of work. You know, the priorities in life, if you will. But regardless, I'm very glad that I did so because it has allowed me to do exactly what I wanted to do, which was lose myself to this game for just a few days. You know, next week, a brand new work week, we get back to normal, and I pace myself as I normally would, all good. But at least I got to just lose myself for a few days this week, and I cannot wait to share with you what I have discovered in that losing of myself. So, the opening hours in Ragnarok, you know, we start out very similar to how we did in God of War 2018, but I loved the setting. I love those snow-covered woods, the wind whipping around and snowflakes, and just something about it just really feels Viking or Norse. It just fits perfectly with the lore and the mythology. And as you're going through this area, you spend what I would have considered a, you know, pretty decent amount of time. It's not crazy long, and you could probably zip through it pretty quick if you're just kind of going, if you're not really exploring, right? You can probably get through it quicker than what I did. But regardless, you know, I enjoyed how they were continuing what was left at the end of 2018's story and also expanding on essentially that final scene that we saw where Thor pops up at the house to say hello. So I really enjoyed the training piece of it, if you will. And that's the thing that we all have to do through every game we play, right? Is we have to go through that tutorial, that opening sequence. And some games do it a lot better than others. This is one of those games because the way the tutorials are presented, it is not bogged down on the fun. It is not done in such a way where it's very like, hey, go to this area and now practice a swing of your axe. It is all very natural and fluid to the flow of what's happening in the game's story, in the game's world, and I loved that. So the opening sequences are just awesome. And I mean, I just got to say that Santa Monica has really just gotten perfected in this style of approach to God of War and to just gaming in general, because the way they put everything together and then culminated with this massive, awesome, epic scene to just kind of say, boom, welcome to Ragnarok, and then kind of let you go on your way is just really expertly done. So after you get past those opening hours and the prologue is what I'll call it, if you will. That's not an official description of it by Sony Santa Monica. It's just my personal term for it. Once you get past that prologue, man, you go to Svartalfheim. And there's many locations in this realm because, as was the case in 2018, you're obviously exploring the nine realms. And it's just, I loved the varying visual differences in every single realm, and it's no change here. I mean, just the absolute visual identity is what I call it of these realms, and the enemy types and the character types and just everything is just so awesome. And I loved Svartalfheim. And there are a lot of just completely contrasting types of environments here. You start out kind of in the swamplands and you're just, or the wetlands is technically what they call them in the game, the Arvanger wetlands to be exact. And as you're going through there, you're just kind of taking your boat with you and Atreus and Kratos and stopping off at little islands here or there and getting collectibles and fighting different enemies and learning lore and all the stuff that you do in these games. And I was just loving it. You finally get to this village that you're trying to get to is Nidavellir. And as you're going through this village, there's just something very ominous in the air, and it was really well paced. And the perspective, the scale of perspective for Kratos and the size of what you would consider maybe a normal human being compared to dwarves, because this is more of a dwarven known village, it was really cool and really well done. But then the game just really opens up from an exploration perspective. Once you get out into the Bay of Bounty, it's just this massive reservoir of water and boat exploration with multiple islands that you can stop off at, and quests and collectible hunting that just kept me busy for hours, guys. I just hours sitting there going around on my boat, stopping off at all these different places, doing side quests, finding collectibles, fighting enemies. All the while upgrading my gear and just thoroughly enjoying every aspect of gameplay that this game was throwing at me. And this is where I'm talking about the contrast and the very complete balance of differentiation of location that Santa Monica has done so well in both 2018 and already in this game as well in Ragnarok. So obviously you start out in these wetlands, kind of a tight, narrow, almost like a river type area. But then you get out in this massive reservoir area, and then it eventually leads you to the Yarnsmita pit mines. And these pit mines, oh, I loved the mountainous kind of terrain to get to the actual mines themselves. And then once you got into the mines, obviously they're underground. The way that they were designed and some of the areas that you explore in there, just the beauty of the graphics. And there were sequences where you have to take these tiny little boats that are in, like, little wooden channels, if you will, that have running water through them, and the running water takes the boat through, and whatever your next destination may be is where it takes you to. And it just reminded me very much of an amusement park boat ride, kind of like Pirates of the Caribbean, if you've ever ridden that. Oh man, it was really cool. And the way they had just designed the whole layout of everything, the depth of just the deepness of some of the chasms, how low they go in these areas, and also just the stalactites and stalagmites. I mean, just everything about these areas were just awesome. And this is called, actually, once you got into this, the internal underground area was called the Apple Core. And I don't know, I loved searching for collectibles and figuring out puzzles and fighting the enemies, and just it was so well done. After we left there, we went to Alfheim. And just to also say this, you travel the realms by going back and forth to essentially a treehouse. And this treehouse is where it's kind of like your hub in between all the different realms. And there you can kind of talk to the dwarves from the first 2018 God of War. And it's where they live. And they can tell you different random comments about different things going on, or they can upgrade your gear. Just a lot of cool stuff that happens while they're there. And it's a fun little area, I'll just say that. And as you continue to progress in the overall game, when you come back, things change. I'll just say that new characters may pop up, new things may be there for you to explore or to find interest in. But the bottom line, after we get through that and I got to Alfheim, which, if those of you who played God of War 2018, you may remember that is the realm of the elves. And in 2018's God of War, we got to see and be in the middle of the war between the light and the dark elves, which is actually really cool in the way that they had done it. Sony Santa Monica, that is. Within that game world, in the context of a game, it was just awesome. A lot of great story sequences were in that realm in God of War 2018. Well, we go back to this realm in this game, and initially I was like, well, I've already been here. I kind of want to see something new and different. Gamers, I was not disappointed. It is totally different from the way that it looked in God of War 2018. If you remember, in God of War 2018, it was kind of covered with fungus and all this stuff everywhere, and it just looked like a ruin, if you will. Well, since then, it has very much grown much more beautiful. And as I was exploring the different temples and tunnels and areas around this area in Alfheim, man, just the Twilight Stone and the rock roofings and walls are just absolutely gorgeous. It's like this kaleidoscope of color. is the best way I know how to describe it. Just all these different beautiful colors bouncing off the walls, and just purples and pinks and blues and greens, and it just looks amazing. And I absolutely loved exploring those tunnels and those temples. Now, before you leave Alfheim, as you progress in the story, you do have the option before you take that gate back to the treehouse if you want to go to the Barren Desert, which is, it didn't used to be a barren desert. It used to be this beautiful place of lushness and where basically the dark elves were, but because the light elves were so obsessed and were basically taking everything for themselves with the light, it kind of sucked dry and created the Barren Desert. Part of the reason why the dark elves and the light elves are at odds with each other. But regardless, they had been building up this area in your progress through Alfheim up to this point. And once that area opens up and the game gives you the option, hey, you can continue the main story and go back to the treehouse to continue on, or you can go to this path that just opened up to the right and explore the Barren Desert. Gamers, that's where I decided to go. I could not explore the Barren Desert, and let me just say, I've loved it so far. I'm still exploring it. That is currently where I'm at. It is awesome. It's a massive area, so thankfully, Sony Santa Monica gave you a sled that is pulled by some elvish branded wolves, is what I will say they are, and they allow you to get around a lot faster than you otherwise would be able to on foot. And it's just this massive sandstorm going on the whole time you're there. And Atreus has heard this wounded animal, is the best way he knows how to describe it, that's coming from the desert because he has that sensitivity with animals, can kind of speak to them or hear them. And so he hears this hurt animal and he wants to go investigate. And so that's what we're doing now, is there's a lot of random temples and different locations that you can stop off on and fight and go after collectibles and whatnot. There's also a treasure map location in this barren desert, which is really cool to find that. But I am in the underground tunnels right now, getting ever so closer to whatever that wounded being may be. So I can't wait to see what that ends up being. And I just got to talk for a brief couple of minutes here, real quick. The bestiary. If you know me, if you listen to my show for a while, I love a game with a good, varied list of enemy types. God of War is no stranger to that because 2018 was very well rounded and very diverse. Gamers, it is the exact same here in Ragnarok. I love the variedness of the enemy types. There's so many different types of enemies. They're all kind of, in a lot of ways, most of them are unique to their own realms, but some of them can cross realms based on the terrain. It's just awesome. And then you have multiple versions of the same type of enemy, and the way that they're differentiated is also really well done, implemented within the fighting and the combat of the game. And speaking of the combat, I mean, the combat is just as amazing as you would expect it to be based on 2018 if you played that. It's just something so amazing and fulfilling and satisfying about just a mass of enemies, and you're just going ham on them. And you're swapping between the Leviathan, the Blades of Chaos, getting these combos going, shooting them with the arrows from Atreus. All this finishing moves, I mean, environmental kills, there's just everything going on when it's all flowing at once. It is just euphoric as a gamer, and I've absolutely loved every second of it. The story has been just top to bottom amazing so far. Oh my God, like it's been driving me along with everything else. I mean, everything in this game so far is amazing, but I love the characters, I love the story. And just every aspect of this game so far has sounded off on all cylinders for me. And if you haven't played it yet, I hope you get a chance to very quickly, whether it's PS4, PS5. I don't think it matters. You're going to have an amazing experience regardless of what console you play on. Man, what an amazing time I have had in those 16 hours with God of War Ragnarok. I can't wait to continue to tell you my adventures that I've had in this game. But one thing before moving on from it that I have left to do, I have to declare that God of War Ragnarok is my next platinum pursuit. Gamers, if you haven't listened to my show before, Platinum Pursuit is a newer segment that I've added where if there is a game I'm playing on PS5 that I'm like, you know what? I've looked at the trophy list, I've played the game a little bit, I can tell you, I'm in love with it. I like it enough to go for that platinum trophy. I'm doing this and I'm committing to it. I am committing to you listeners. In a public space, I am going for that platinum. So that's what I mean by platinum pursuit. So as of right now, today, I am committing that I am going after the platinum in God of War Ragnarok. Don't know how long that'll take me, but I'm all right. I am buckled in. I am ready for the journey. Let's do this. So that was my time in God of War Ragnarok this past few days and this past week. Now, there was another game that released that I got a little bit of time in. I was able to pull myself away from God of War just for a little bit to try out, just enough to kind of tell you guys what my initial thoughts were on it, and that is Sonic Frontiers. Gamers, Sonic Frontiers was the other game that released this past week, and I'll be honest with you, I was actually very shocked that Sega, knowing once God of War announced its November 9th release date, they were like, ah, we're good. We're still going to release the day before God of War on November 8th. We got this. But I respect them for it. And, you know, the more I thought about it, I'm like, well, in a lot of ways, the main audience of Sonic Frontiers is very different from what the target audience is for God of War Ragnarok. God of War Ragnarok, you got this mature, M-rated game, more like late teens and adults is what that's focused on. And Sonic Frontiers, really pretty much anybody. But probably the target audience in Sega's mind is the younger crowd, right? Well, I've been around for a while in gaming, and I have always enjoyed Sonic. And this game also, I've talked about it on the show before in the past year since this game has been announced, and different trailers we've seen, and there's different excitement levels that I've had for it at different times. But it got to launch, and I read some reviews for it, and I was looking at it, and I was like, man, I really do want to try this game out. It feels like it's, for the first time in a very long time, the kind of Sonic game that I want to play. An open world, 3D kind of game. And not necessarily an RPG, but has RPG aspects to it. And just, you know, it's not a linear game. It's not just a 2D side-scrolling, old-school style Sonic game, which I do love that. But this was something different. The graphics looked really good. So I was like, you know what? All in all, I want to try this out. I got to try. So on Wednesday night of this past week, I decided to check it out. I was able to get a little over an hour of playtime in with the game, and that got me past basically that first opening world or island, if you will. And I am here to say that it was a lot of fun. Now, graphically, again, I thought the game looks really, really nice. I'm playing on a Series X, is what I decided to go with for this title. And I thought it beautiful looking game. Let me just say that outright. Runs very smooth. The supersonic speed cyber levels is what they're called. Those are awesome. Those are really, really awesome and harken back to what I would consider more of like Sonic Adventure from that 3D perspective, just kind of zooming through levels and, you know, beating the clock is your goal along with getting as many coins as possible. They also have Red Star coins that are in there as well to add to your overall rating and score of that level. And I just thought overall, those were a lot of fun. Now, when you get to the open world, which is what was really kind of highlighted mostly, I would say, in all of the videos and screenshots and things of that nature, it's kind of like you, if you know what I'm talking about, if you've seen the pictures of Sonic on this island, essentially, looking area with, you know, green grass and stone structures, in the distance there's this ocean, and that setting is where you get transported to, if you will. And this area is full of a lot of different kind of things to do. So obviously you can run around as Sonic and jump around, and there's different little areas where you can acquire coins in unique ways. And a lot of them you have to figure out, how do I get up there, or how do I utilize these spring buttons and springboards around to get access to everything. And then there are enemies in the game. So far they've pretty much just been your run-of-the-mill robotic type enemies, which makes sense because Dr. Robotnik, right? But overall, it's a very basic game, and that's not a bad thing. It's just, when I go from playing God of War Ragnarok and I'm playing Sonic Frontiers, I know that I expect a very different type of game and very much less baggage, if you will, or complexities when it comes to Sonic Frontiers versus Ragnarok. But from what I played, I enjoyed it very much. Let me just say that. But the biggest detriment to me, I felt like the world itself, and this is what I was worried about in the previews that I saw, the world itself was very open and barren in a way. I mean, it's massive and it's beautiful to look at. And there's a lot of cool little secrets and things to try to figure out and find. And you got some cool moves that I've learned so far as Sonic. The combat is very few and far between. You got some bosses that are called guardians that you can take out that get you different higher valued items, I will say. And obviously, you know, Chaos Stones and Emeralds and whatnot, those are all a big focus, just like any Sonic game. But my point being, there just was so far in that first island. And maybe it was just because it was that first island and the tutorial and kind of just setting you up on getting you started. I don't know yet because it didn't go past that, but not just over an hour's time. That is what I came away with is, okay, this is a fun game. It's definitely nice to be able in this open environment with Sonic. And I'll be honest though, my favorite parts of the game so far have been those cyber levels that you go to as an offshoot when you find the stone structure that houses those levels, if you will. So I just want to see more from it. So I do want to continue playing the game and kind of opening it up a little bit more and seeing what more I see. And hopefully things do start to become more full, if you will, whether it's in the environment, other activities to do and whatnot. I can't wait to see if that is the case. I hope that is, but I did overall enjoy my time with it so far. Now, in addition to the hour-ish that I played of Sonic, I also played about a half hour more of A Plague Tale: Requiem. I'll just real quick go over that and just say, you know, when I last left off last episode, I told you guys I was right there at the end of chapter 7. I just knew I was right there at the end, but I wasn't able to finish it. Well, took me about a half hour afterwards and before God of War had come out that I did go back and played and completed chapter 7 of A Plague Tale: Requiem. So I am currently on chapter 8. Can't wait to get back to that game eventually, but right now it's all Kratos and Atreus for me. But I did also play Amnesia Rebirth for another half hour. And if you remember, I was exploring those dark, absolutely terrifying tunnels underneath the Egyptian desert. And I eventually, in that half hour, found my way out of those tunnels and back out onto the surface and to this really cool kind of ravine type area. And I can't wait to explore more of that. But I'll be honest, guys, God of War Ragnarok has completely consumed my gaming priorities, as I think most of you would understand. So that is where I'm at this week and what I have been playing. But out of all of that, what ended up being my highlight of the week? Gamers, and all the gaming goodness that I played this past week, when it came time to finding and narrowing down one specific highlight to talk about in this segment, honestly, it was obvious for me. It was coming from God of War, Ragnarok. It was just deciding what it was going to be. But once this realization that I'm going to talk about in this segment happened for me, it was no questions asked. This is my highlight. So what it was realizing what Kavisir's poems actually are. Now, Kavisir is the name of a presumed gentleman that has been writing these poems. These poems are a collectible that you could find throughout your journey in God of War Ragnarok. There's 14 of them. And I collected, I would say, probably three of them with honestly, really just no extra thought in the world. I'm just thinking, okay, I'm collecting the poem, I'm reading what the poem is. Okay, interesting, interesting. Trying to get something out of it, right? You know, I always try to get something out of everything. Well, it wasn't until the fourth one. And when Kratos finds these poems, they are leather-bound books that are laying on the ground simply somewhere in the world. And when he goes to pick it up, the camera adjusts and Kratos tilts the book with his hand a certain way to where the cover is facing the screen in such a way that you as the player can see it. And on the fourth one, the way he angled it and I saw the cover, I'm like, wait a minute, is that? No. And so at that point, I realized what these poems were. And from then on, it has been absolutely phenomenal and amazing every time I come across one of these and deciphering them. And some are more easier than others. But what is that deciphering, you may ask? Gamers, all 14 of these poems represent a Sony exclusive franchise. So the leather-bound cover in question that I recognized, it happened to be Clank, his face, his visage from Ratchet and Clank. And I was like, wait a minute, that's Clank. And then it clicked with me. I was like, wait a minute, Sony first-party games nine times out of 10 anymore, they are very awesome about adding Easter eggs into their games of other Sony exclusive games. So I'm curious. And guys, I went back through the previous three and I was like, oh my God, the light bulb came on. And immediately, once I knew that's what I was looking for, the poems had so much more resonance and were so much more awesome. And then in the journal screen, when you're actually reading these within the pause menu, if you will, it actually shows the cover. Now, not color like they are in the game world, but the picture is still drawn on the cover of the books for the poem. So it's just awesome when you look at the different pictures and compare that to what the name of the poems are. It was very ingenious, some of these names that they've come up with. And then the poems themselves, it was just like, oh, this is awesome. Sony Santa Monica outdid themselves in this. And I attribute this, honestly, to Naughty Dog, because I feel like they started this in Uncharted with having other first-party Sony exclusive games as Easter egg collectibles pop up in their games. And so now we see pretty much every Sony first party exclusive doing the same thing. And I love it because they do it in each their own way. Horizon, I had mentioned before when I was playing through Forbidden West, if you'll remember and were listening to me then, you could find different pieces of Easter eggs that were Kratos and God of War. And here we are. It's just awesome. It is awesome. So when you find those poems, read a little bit into them and see them. If at first you don't realize, really think about what the title is or what some of the verbiage is that's going on or even the cover. And it was awesome. So that was easily my highlight of the week. Now let's go open up a buried treasure gaming chest and see what kind of gaming tips I have for you in God of War Ragnarok. Gamers, if you are a completionist like I am and you don't want to leave the area that you're currently in until you have searched every nook and cranny and gotten every collectible marked off of the map, I'm here to tell you, don't go too crazy in Ragnarok trying to figure out where all the collectibles are in a given realm your first time through. And the reason I say that is because there's going to be times where you're going to come across areas that are inaccessible at the first time you come across them, due to the fact you just don't have the abilities to get there yet. And it's like this throughout the entirety of the game. Sure, you can still explore to your heart's content and try to get everything else if you'd like, but don't spend too much time overthinking things or overexploring, thinking that you're missing something, because you're probably not. You probably just don't have the ability or item yet. And I'll be honest, the game does a great job of having Mimir, you know, the talking head, the smartest man on the face of the earth, that's hanging off of Kratos's belt, right? So Mimir and Atreus, honestly, they often are usually pretty good at saying, hey, we don't have the item that's needed for you to access that yet. Or, hey, how about we just keep going on? We're not trained on that yet. So listen out for that. But just in general, I'm here to let you know, before you even get started in the game, if you haven't yet, don't stress over it. Eventually, you will get what you need as far as abilities and items and be able to come back and travel to the realms at any point in time to your heart's content. It was confirmed there's no missable trophies in this game. If you're going for a platinum trophy or just trying to get all the collectible trophies, nothing is missable, so don't worry about that. There's no blocked off areas in the game where there's a point of no return, like, oh man, I didn't get all the collectibles or didn't do this one thing over here, but now the wall is crumbled behind me and I can't go back ever again. There is none of that. Everything is accessible throughout the entirety of the game, as long as you have the abilities to access those areas. And once you complete the game, it is like most games are anymore, where the entire world is available for you to do and explore what you'd like. So, save some time, explore to your heart's content, but don't overthink it, because you probably just don't have the item or ability yet. Now let's go check out this week's Captain's Decree. Gamers, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, I wanted to discuss with you what I am speculating, what I am excited and hopeful for in the future for God of War as a franchise. So, Captain's Decree this week, what's next for God of War? Well, first up, gamers, it's the theme. As I stated earlier, the Norse mythology, that setting, that is done with Ragnarok. And that means that whatever next is coming up in the series is going to be something completely different, right? Well, at the end and towards the end, that is, in 2018's God of War, you start to see pieces put together for you and kind of explain to you that, hey, yes, Kratos, as we knew him originally, was in Greek mythology and kind of plowed his way through the Greek gods. And for different things and different abilities of how that actually happened, he ended up and crossed realms into Norse mythology and is now dealing with the Norse gods. Well, obviously, knowing that that is an option and that that is possible within the world of and the universe of the games, they also alluded to the fact that this could potentially be carrying over into all of the worlds and histories' mythologies. So for me, what mythology would I most want to see Kratos tackle next? Gamers, I want the Egyptian mythology. I want to go to ancient Egypt or a setting like it and have the Egyptian gods be the next lineup for Kratos to attack. Not necessarily attack, but to have within his story. Whether it's another duology, like 2018's God of War and Ragnarok, a trilogy, whatever the case may be, I would love to see the gods of Egypt and that mythology fully explored. And I think that it begs for the type of gameplay and style that these last two God of War titles have been. I can only imagine going through pyramids and the desert and oases and the villages of Egypt. It's just, I can't even imagine how amazing it would be. I will say that Assassin's Creed Origins is my favorite Assassin's Creed, in part because of the ancient Egyptian setting, and that was my most wanted setting for an Assassin's Creed game before it actually happened. So I'm just very big into Egyptian lore and mythology, and just love that setting of the desert and the pyramids and mummies and everything else that I can only imagine that they could come up with for enemy types and the bestiary like I was talking about earlier. So what I also want from this game, though, is I want them, and I'm sure it probably will be at this point, it's a PS5 game built for the PS5 from the ground up, only on PS5 and Unreal Engine 5. I think that would be absolutely stunning because already Ragnarok is just phenomenally gorgeous, but I can only imagine what it would look like if it was built for the ground up for the PS5 in Unreal Engine 5. So that's what I'm looking for so far. We got Egyptian theme, Unreal Engine 5, PS5 only. Here's a big question I have, though. Does Sony bring back Atreus? Now, obviously, I haven't beaten Ragnarok, so I don't know what the outcome is of Atreus and also Atreus and Kratos. Like, I don't know if there's going to be some kind of father-son split where they disagree and they go their separate ways. I don't know. But do they bring back Atreus? Or do they go a different route? Because my question is this. Have we already gotten so used to having Atreus there? I talked about the combat earlier. Would it be a detriment to the next game if you took Atreus out of it and it was back to only Kratos? Now, don't get me wrong. There are sequences in 2018 and in Ragnarok where it's just Kratos. You don't have Atreus with you. But I'll be honest, there are times where I'm missing him in combat because I use him a lot to help set up and stun the enemies that I go to attack. And it's just, it fits perfectly. And that's what I was saying earlier. So it'd be kind of, I'd be open to it. But I think that it would be kind of a jarring coming off of two games, the length that they are, and going into the new game and just Kratos. But I'd be all right with it. But that's the question. Do they bring him back or do they do something new? Do they have a new character take the place of Atreus and have a new secondary character travel with Kratos? Time will tell. Do I want a new character? Not necessarily. Atreus has really grown on me. He grew on me to where I really liked him in the 2018 game. And then I very much liked him even more in Ragnarok as he's continuing to grow up and get older and so on and so forth. So I'd like to see Atreus come back, but if they did something new, I'm not necessarily opposed to it, depending on why and what that actually is. Next up, do they actually completely reinvent the gameplay style again, like they did with 2018, or do they keep refining and making additions to this current style? And what do I want? So that's it, man. I would love them to just kind of keep going and refining and perfecting this style. But at the same time, one thing that was so refreshing and that most, I would say everybody I talked to that played 2018's God of War was how much different it felt from the previous entries in the series. And it was needed at that time because by the end of Ascension, I would say, and its release, the God of War series, it started as far as quality and just, not to say that Ascension was a bad game, but I think the desire from gamers as a community had dwindled considerably from when God of War 3 released years prior. And it was almost one of those situations of franchise fatigue, more of the same. So what do? Do you take what has been so massively successful and lauded in a positive way with 2018 and Ragnarok and continue refining that? Or do you just, hey, we're going to walk away while we're on top and we're going to try something completely brand new and try to reinvent the wheel again? I don't know. If you would ask me back before 2018, I would have said, don't mess with the combat because it was so awesome. But they added Atreus and they did all kinds of different refinements to it. And it's been amazing. They've made it their own for this duology. So again, I'm all right with either one. I'm all right with if they keep it and they refine it and they keep adding to it and making it new and feel new and fresh with each game, I'm all right with that. Or if they completely reinvent the wheel, I'll be there to see if it's a wheel worth traveling on again. Now, when could we see the next God of War game? When might that be? Well, given the fact that it's been 4 years between 2018 and Ragnarok's release, I would say we have at least 4 years to go before we would see the next God of War game. So that would be probably pushing 2026. It might would even slip into 2027. But given the fact that that time frame is around the time that if this generation of consoles, the PS5 and the Series X, follows the timeline and length of time of the last generation of consoles of the Xbox One and the PS4, they were 7 years essentially from the PS3's launch to the PS4, or the PS4's launch, excuse me, to the PS5's launch. So if Sony is following that same trajectory and that same length of time, then theoretically, 2013 to 2020 to 2027, that would be right around the time probably that I think that we'll get the next God of War game. Or do I think that Sony is going to kind of say, hey, we're going to put this in its dormancy and let it marinate for a little while. We'll come back to it, you know, within a year or two of the launch of the next generation. I don't think they'll do that. I think these games are coming out and they're selling too well and they are getting reviewed too highly and too much loved for them to wait too long. So I'm thinking that by the end of this generation, probably within 4 years minimum, we will see the next adventure of Kratos and hopefully Atreus. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com, as well as searching for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks. You can also find me on social media on Instagram at lostatseagaming, as well as on Twitter at lostatseagamin, the number one. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.